Hi, thank you for tuning in on Yachting International Radio. You are listening to Maritime Unity, the podcast from the maritime community where we talk with people from the entire maritime realm about safety, inclusion, and to discover what connects us. My name is Evelianne Veldkamp, and today we talk with Carleen Leiden-Walker. Hi, Carleen. Welcome.
Hi, Eva. Thank you for having me on your podcast.
Yeah, it's such a pleasure. To start, can you please introduce yourself for us to get to know you?
Well, I'd be happy to. First off, I was a competitive sailor, so I did start out in the yachting industry, but I morphed over to the commercial maritime industry. And I am CEO of Morgan Marketing and Communications, which I founded in 1999. I'm a CEO and co-founder of NEMEPA, the North American Marine Environment Protection Association, and I'm also Chief Evolution Officer, CEO, of Shipping Insight, the Fleet Optimization and Innovation Platform for Shipping. On top of that, I'm an IMO Goodwill Maritime Ambassador.
Yeah, that's amazing. You have so many nice things that you do. So for anybody listening, I hope you will enjoy our talk with Carleen today. And yeah, so let's start, because before we started, you wanted to say something about the name of our podcast title. Well, and I'm very curious to hear.
Well, I'm not so much challenging the name of your podcast, Maritime Unity, as much as I'd like to just acknowledge that the maritime industry isn't unified. Mm-hmm. And that is part of our great challenge when we're trying to get acknowledgement and visibility about the value proposition of the maritime industry. Yes, we transport more than 90% of the world's goods and energy in a cost-efficient and an environmentally benign way. But at the same time, nobody thinks about us until the Ever Given gets stuck in the Suez Canal or we have a supply chain crisis. Mm-hmm. But the maritime industry provides an invaluable service to global trade and global society, but we don't get the recognition that we deserve because the industry isn't unified. Mm-hmm. I know the IMO attempts to create a platform for communicating issues surrounding the maritime industry, and they're doing increasingly well under the leadership of the new Secretary General, Arsenio Dominguez. But the industry is highly fragmented, mm-hmm. and because of that, we're not as effective as we need to be in order to do things like protect seafarer rights and ensure seafarer welfare. And I would hate to say this, but until COVID, mm-hmm. The mariner wasn't really recognized in terms of it, their needs or their desires or even the value that they're giving to our society. Mm-hmm. And the mariner is the linchpin, the underpinnings of the global maritime industry, which in and of itself is the underpinning of global trade and global society. So while I can never say that COVID was a good thing, I will say that out of that came the recognition for the mariner's role and our need as a society and as an industry to look after their welfare.
Yeah, exactly. That's so well said. And thank you for, notifying that more, because I think, after COVID, we just went on with our lives and some things improved, but a lot of things did not. And I think you're exactly mm-hmm. right by, acknowledging this. So thank you very much. And just to go back, because I'm very curious, because I think the idea behind the name Maritime Unity was exactly what you said. Because if we can work together more and hear yes. each other's perspective a little bit more, then we can, try to aim for unity, let's say. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll never achieve it, but we can at least try to, come together and connect and hear each other out and listen to each other and then, create this dialogue on which we can build a better maritime world. And I think, you know, it's not for nothing they call the Earth a blue marble, right?
Well, I think it's an admirable goal, and I really hope you can achieve it. We can all achieve it, because it's imperative, particularly in today's world, to become together to advocate for our industry and improve our industry.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Which brings us to my next question to you. And it's particularly interesting, I think, because you are American. And as we speak, it's February 2025. And, you know, we have a lot of changes going on in the world right now, especially on DEI. So diversity, equality, or equity and inclusion. So with your perspective, what do you think is the importance of DEI? And are you if you strive for unified goals, and are you worried about the current changes that, you know, are now happening in the US under the Trump administration that is trying to erase this from the agenda somehow on governments? So what are your thoughts about this?
Well, my thoughts are that when you have societal change, the pendulum tends to swing to the extremes. Mm-hmm. And we had reached the extremes of the societal pendulum in terms of accommodations and inclusion, and basically dividing our society into, you know, tens and tens of different segments. And I value every individual. But as a government, as a society, we can't always accommodate everyone's individuality under a global umbrella or even under a national umbrella. Now, I recognize that we'd swung too far to one side, but under this new administration, we're going too far to the other side. Mm-hmm. Where we need to be is in the middle, which is where we appreciate the value and the contributions that diversity brings, that equity brings, and that inclusion brings. But we cannot compromise safety. We can't compromise values, and we can't compromise effectiveness while we're doing that. And that's where we need to be, is to be open to where people are, but hope that they can also add value to the framework that we need them for. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I'm concerned about DEI being thrown out the window. We had made great strides, but there were abuses within it. Mm-hmm. So we need to find that common ground, that middle ground where DEI can be incorporated into productive environments. And my concern is that the baby will get thrown out with the bathwater if we walk away from all DEI commitments. Yeah. I was particularly disheartened and disappointed and dismayed, all the disses, when the Commandant of the United States Coast Guard, Linda Fagan, was summarily fired on day two of the Trump administration. And part of the explanation was for her attention to DEI. Mm-hmm. She was working to bring the Coast Guard up to a level of inclusion, and she was basically thrown out because of it. Now, I think there were other political motivations there, because the Coast Guard is the smallest of the services, armed services. And was sending a message to the other armed services, hey, if you don't follow our path, you're going to get kicked out too. But I regret that, because she was a wonderful leader. And she was the first female commandant, but also the first female in charge of one of the armed services. Mm-hmm. So dismissing her was unconscionable. And I'm still quite disappointed, dismayed, and disillusioned, quite honestly, that she was fired. Yeah. Now what we're seeing is throughout the entire government system, No matter what the area, all the DEI policies are being eradicated, and we will see on a whole of government approach.
Mm-hmm.
And that is regrettable. I'm not seeing the resistance to that strategy that I'd hoped for. It seems as though we're in this shock and awe stage of the new administration. And I don't know if people are waiting to see where is it that we stand up and fight. I certainly hope that we're not rolling over and allowing the steamroller to wipe out a good decade of progress for diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Yeah, so true. And I think when you focus on unity, actually it makes sense, right? What we're all striving for. Mm-hmm. And thank you for mentioning that, what happened in the U.S. Coast Guard, because I think I saw the news as well. It was big world news, right?
Yes.
And the narrative was totally on diversity, equity, and inclusion. But there was so much more going on. And in the previous episode of my podcast, I also talked about this with Jessica, about policy making and about all the good things that have been going on in the U.S. Because if good things are going on and you're taking things by the, you're seeing things for what they are, and especially abusive situations, and if people get hurt and abused, that's so ugly. And that is so sad, and you get very angry from what is going on if you finally see it. But in the first place, it's a good thing that it's on the table. And I think that is forgotten by most. So thank you for pointing that out, that it's actually also a very positive thing if you are, well, let's say, brave enough to really put it on the table and let it be there for a while. And then, of course, it's the question how you want to manage it. And that's difficult. That's a complex thing to do, because then you need to, you know, do all sorts of things together. But in the end, it's for the best. And it's too bad that it's now the narrative was exactly the opposite of what was going on. Because I think the U.S. is working for years and years on being more... Well, I come from Europe, so I have a different perspective. And in my perspective, people from the U.S. are much more open to asking for help and support, for example, for psychological or mental support, for one. It's much, much more normalized. And it's also much more normalized to talk about diversity, and that's, you know, okay to have a different background or have a different skin color or have a different gender, or... it's much more open than in Europe, from my perspective, I have to say. So
okay.
It's very, very interesting that now this is all, you know, swiped off the table and erased, or, you know, well, I think it may be not erased. That's up to us, right? That's up to the people. But yeah, I look at it with a very interesting eye. How do you say that in English?
Yes, that's exactly how you say.
Oh,
yes.
Well. So to understand a little bit more about how the U.S. works, and I a little bit already know the answer because I used to work for an open international flags day, which was managed from the U.S. Just to let our audience and people listening know that, or understand, what is the influence of the USA in the maritime sector with regards to governance and policy making this way? Because I think the US doesn't have a big fleet of ships under their own flag, but the US has a big influence. And together with the other subject that we talked about now, I think that's interesting. So can you maybe explain?
Well, as you point out, the US does not have a large flag. The entire U.S. flag fleet is probably 4% of the world's tonnage. But when you look at the international fleet, it's 0.4. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'm a co-author of a book entitled 0.4, How U.S. Leadership in Maritime Will Secure America's Future. When I mention that statistic in the States, for instance, a little over a year ago, I was going through our halls of government. I was talking to senators. I was talking to congressmen. I would ask them the same question. If we use 55,000 as a number, because you can always parse the number, if we use 55,000 international trading cargo ships, what percentage are U.S. flag? I got answers ranging from 25% to 70%. That was the perception of our Congress as to America's U.S. flag for international shipping. And when I told them it was actually 0.4, they were surprised and to a certain extent horrified. What they do about it is what it remains to be seen, but Senator Kelly and then Senator Waltz and two others put together a bill called the Ships Act, which is a mechanism for it's legislation designed to restore America's position in the global trading fleet. That bill was tabled. It's going to be reintroduced with its new sponsors, but it still includes Senator Mark Kelly, who, by the way, in addition to being an astronaut and a well-known one at that, graduated from Kings Point, the United States Merchant Maritime Academy. So they're going to be reintroducing it maybe as soon as the end of this month. And then what we need to do, speaking of maritime unity, we need to bring together industry to support it and to get it through Congress. And I hope that happens. I'm planning an event. Last year, I initiated National Maritime Week because I felt that our industry should receive more visibility than MARAD was able to offer, which is a two-hour ceremony on May 22nd. So I created National Maritime Week, and I'm now working on the second National Maritime Week. And we're gaining more support for it because we need to bring all of the elements of maritime together. We need to bring together the U.S. flag, both the Jones Act trade and the international fleet. We need to bring the maritime labor unions together. We need to bring the ship owners together. We need to bring the ports involved with it. Yes, the U.S. has a small fleet, but it has a tremendous voice when it comes to global trade because we're the second largest trading partner in the world after China. Mm-hmm. We need to project that commitment to the maritime industry. And there are a lot of U.S. ship owners through the open registries, et cetera. And we need to figure out how we can develop relationships with those ship owners that will support the United States' national security, as well as our economic, energy, climate, and workforce security.
Yeah. So nice to talk about this. So very, very interesting. Thank you so much for sharing this. It's very insightful, I think. And it's also very relevant, right? Because if you think about it, we're all on this world together. And as you said in the beginning, we're so dependent on transport by sea. And I come from a very seafaring country. So we have a lot of national days to celebrate our maritime legacy, I think it is. And it's, now I think about it, it's, I think this year is Sail Amsterdam, which is, you know, the whole city of Amsterdam is celebrating the maritime sector. Good. Last year we had Sail Delfzijl, which also I work in the city of Delfzijl, which is, by the way, the birthplace of Abel Tasman, who, you know, the one who did all the discovery things in Australia, from Tasmania, right? And I think, that's important to note and also not only celebrate, I think, because I think that's where the real magic happens. Also to recognize what is not nice about it. So what you should prevent, because I think, you know, with shipping, especially Dutch shipping from the Dutch Empire, you know, a while ago, I'm not very good in numbers and years to remember this in history. But yeah, a lot of ugly things also came with it, like colonization of the world happened, right? And global trading really started back then. So I think the maritime industry is so good to use also, you know, as a mind practice on how we can really make it better for everybody and for the world also.
Well, just to give you some perspective, maritime is the underpinning of a nation's prosperity. And if we look into history, for instance, Portugal was a maritime power in the 15th and the 16th centuries. Not so much today. Spain was a maritime power until the mid-17th century. Not so much today. As you said, the Netherlands was a maritime power until the mid-18th century. Not so much today. Great Britain, remember the phrase, Britannia rules the waves. Well, not so much today. China was a maritime power until 1421 when the emperor at the time shut the country down. But they've seen a remarkable resurgence in their maritime industry in the past 30 years. And just to give you another benchmark, the end of World War II, 50% of the world's tonnage was U.S. flag. Wow. And today, as we discussed, it's 0.4.
Yeah. So very interesting. And I'm really curious to know what the book is about. So if people want to read it, I think we will share a link. You can ask, questions.
It's on Amazon. 0.4 on Amazon.
Well, that's even more easy. And if anybody has questions, you, of course, you can ask that also in the comments or on LinkedIn, or, just try and reach us and we will be happy, to engage, I think. So thank you so much for talking about this, Carleen. It's so exciting to talk with you about this important stuff.
Well, I feel passionately about it because I love this industry and I want this industry to be its best possible self in providing transportation services to support global trade and global society.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people really care. And it would be nice to, feel that more. I think also if I can make a wish for this entire sector, I think when you look to the fishing industry, by the way, you can see this a lot. But also in the yachting industry, by the way, there's so much heart for the ocean and for everything that lives in the sea, and if you choose a maritime profession, you have to have it because it's not always nice to be in the middle of the ocean, right? It's pretty isolated and it can make you feel very humble as a human being. So you have to have some kind of heart, the feeling deep inside of love for the element that you work in, right? The sea. Mm-hmm. And I think if we can find this, collective feeling, then we can overcome our difficulties because there's a lot of difficulties right now. So,
yeah. But that's why I created NAMEPA, the North American Marine Environment Protection Association. It is based on HELMEPA, the Hellenic Marine Environment Protection Association, and there are five MEPAs around the world. And its mission is to save our seas, but it is an industry-led organization, which strives to come together as an industry to mitigate its impacts on the marine environment. It also strives to educate students about protecting the marine environment, decreasing marine debris, for instance. And we also strive to communicate the value proposition of the industry to the general public so that they have an awareness and appreciation for the services that we're providing to them.
Mm-hmm.
And that way we can get more attention and more unity, I would hope, around the maritime industry if the public recognized their relationship with shipping so that they would support initiatives in governments. I mean, we know ships don't vote, but people do. And if the people feel strongly about supporting the maritime industry, then they will talk to their legislative leaders and we can get more support for our industry writ large.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, we should talk to the people from Sail Amsterdam how to do it,
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's a very nice festival and just a good celebration of all that is, that is maritime. So, yeah, we can do it together, right?
Okay.
Okay, so Just before we end, I would like to ask you a question, and I'm asking this to all of the people in my show. I'm making podcast here on Yachting International Radio because my biggest wish is for all of us to see and recognize the human kindness within ourselves and the other. So my question to you is, what makes you feel human and in connection with humankind?
What makes me feel human is helping others. And I do that in the industry through advocacy for mariner welfare, working with people that are supporting the mariners, as well as doing what I can to mitigate the maritime industry's impact on the oceans. And that is a sense of purpose that I think to support the maritime industry to me is a noble endeavor. And that's what I've spent my life doing.
Nice. That's so wonderful. And thank you so much for doing that. That's really, really...
Oh, it's my honor and privilege.
Nice. Really great. And that's a very beautiful, beautiful purpose, I think. So thank you for sharing that. And thank you also for this interview, for being on the show today with us.
Well, thank you for the invitation. And I'm happy to talk to you at any time, Eva. Yeah. I applaud you for your intentions and your sense of purpose about illuminating issues that will unite us all.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thank you so much for these kind words. I try my best.
No. As Yoda said, you do not try, you do.
I do my best. Well, that's actually true. That's actually very, very true. Because if I tried, okay, you would see me. I'm doing it already.
Exactly.
Okay, thank you so much for being here. And also thanks to all the listeners today. I hope you learned a little bit more about inclusion and safety in the maritime sector. Feel free to share if you did. And tot ziens. We will see you in the next episode.